This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Which the Senior Director of Human Resources and Development will share with you. So these are going to be the two major themes for this State of the University address. I'm not going to say much, except to thank all members of the university community, our staff, our students, the union leaders, the SRC, for all their contribution, the contribution they have made to the growing stability of the university. We are the envy of higher education in South Africa because of our growing stability. As we speak now, we have already reached our enrollment target for first-time entering students. We actually reached this target some time ago, and we are likely to go over the target because we've come to realize that more and more parents want to send their children to our university. And we hope this will continue as a culture for our institution so that MUT, small as it is, can carve a niche and a name for itself. When you are stable, you are able to focus on what is important and you are able to make progress. And you are in a position to inspire the confidence of the public and even the funders. So we want to thank all of you for your contribution to this record of institutional stability. Now, before I ask the two colleagues to make their presentation, I want to remind all of you, even our students and parents, wherever they may be, that today is the last day of registration. We have given yesterday and today as the last 2 days, the amnesty days for registration. There will be no further opportunity to register after today. So we want to request students whose registration is still outstanding to make use of this opportunity. We want to believe that at the end of the day, we'll have reached our enrollment target for 2024. We've gone out of our way to assist students who've had a number of challenges, and we hope that the measures we've put in place will enable those students to register. I'm just checking with the CFO whether we'll be able to register every student who's in the queue by 1 o'clock. And he has assured me that if by 1 o'clock we still have students in the queue, the staff in his department will work beyond 1 o'clock. They'll go into overtime to make sure that all students are registered. So we want to appeal to all students to make use of this very, very last opportunity. So, colleagues, I'm going now to hand over to the CFO to first share, you know, the state of finances within our institution, and then Mr. Bridgelal will talk about organizational review. Now, let me just very briefly contextualize what they are going to share with you. For quite some time, there has been concern about the financial viability of our institution. There were analyses that were done in the past showing that given our high levels of expenditure in relation to our income, we are likely to run into problems in the future. This was done a few years ago, this analysis. And then council said to management, do something about this. Especially look at the structure of the organization, because that is where we spend a lot of money. Our salary bill is huge in relation to the income that we get from government and other sources. So we've now reached a stage where we can avoid this important task of doing an organizational review. The administrator has also raised the same problem with us, that we need to do this organizational review because we are simply not financially sustainable in the long term. And we've been asked to look at cost cutting. It's an exercise that we're busy with to see where we can cut. We have cut, I'm sure you've seen the budgets for 2024. But cutting, you know, you can only cut to a certain extent because otherwise you disable your operations. So the challenge is really to take a holistic view of what is happening in the university and see how best, you know, we can minimize expenses and increase our income. So what we've decided to do then, that's why about a year ago we started on the turnaround plan to help us also achieve this. Now we are working on a review of our organization, the structure, to see how we can also tweak the structure to ensure that we minimize our expenses. Now, our message as management is that this review of our organizational structure is a project that we are going to handle with the utmost responsibility. We are aware that quite often when these things happen, there is always fear of retrenchments. Because once you begin to downsize, certain positions may then have to be, in a sense, discontinued. So we are very alive to these sensitivities, and we want to assure you that we are going to manage this process responsibly. The last thing that we want is retrenchments. I spoke about this even last year. That is one thing that we want to avoid. So we'll have to come up with creative ways to make sure that we are sustainable, but at the same time, we have to take care of our expenses. So our appeal to you as members of the university community is to work with us so that we can collectively save the institution. And I'm sure if we work together, we should be able to find some creative solutions to this very difficult project. So my two colleagues will share with you what it is that we are currently working on. So the first one to come to the fore will be the CFO. I don't know, Professor Sibiya, whether you've also been tasked to introduce the CFO.
That's Bia.
It's yours, thank you. Please give me a round of applause.
Good morning, colleagues. I hope you will clap after my presentation as well. You know, whenever I stand in front of this podium speaking to colleagues, colleagues look at me strangely and think, what is the CFO going to say now? Is it good news? Is it bad news? Just move this. Is it bad news? Good news? But colleagues, don't fear. All I'm going to do is just share with you facts. Because I think the facts will speak for themselves. And any decisions we make for the university from a financial perspective are always based on facts. So the task I've been given today is to just provide some insight in terms of university, the finances, but also just looking broader than that, because the finances of the university are also dictated by a lot of factors that are outside our control. So I thought I'd share that with you as well, and then hone in on how that affects the university, the finances, and the operations. So very quickly, just in commencing the presentation, the issues or the topics I'm going to cover is just briefly again a reflection or a re-look at our funding model. So just to refresh everybody's memories and minds and the funding, look at specifically DEET funding. There's some key issues there that we need to talk about. Also, what are the funding challenges faced by MUT and faced by the sector? It's quite important. Look at our tuition and accommodation fee, our capping or the NASFIS capping and the impact it has on funding for the university and finances. Our level of student debt, always a huge concern. So I'll share some insight with you on that, because those are all factors that we take into consideration when we look at the entire finances of the university, on how we go about budgeting for the university and how we're going to allocate the relevant resources. So we'll take then a look at, in a little bit more detail, the 2024 budget. And I want to share with you there a little bit more detail as to that budget. We'll look very briefly of the top 10 operating expenses, and then I will conclude with a few closing remarks regarding finance. I think we're going to reserve questions for the end, for the Q&A session. So if you do have questions, please note them down and we'll take them later. So colleagues, on the funding model hasn't changed. This model has been in existence for many, many years, and it's a funding model for the sector. Specifically on MUT, you'll see the funding. There's three contributors to funding for MUT. The highest contributor is still the DEET and the block grant that we get, which makes up about 39% of our total revenue. It's quite important to understand, followed by accommodation revenue. And then the largest contributor is our student fees, which is about 23%. So the model hasn't changed, which effectively means there's a large dependency we have on the DEET and the block grant. Second to that, a dependency on accommodation. And I'll share with you the changes in terms of how accommodation is being viewed now by the sector and what we need to do there, and why that is important in terms of how it impacts the university and the funding of the university. And then, of course, tuition fees. Over and above the various challenges we have, particularly to MUT, very little contribution from third stream income, which means that we need to, of course, improve and generate more income from besides student fees and accommodation, other sources of revenue. And then our fee base, tuition fee base, is quite low. And that's historical and not something you can all of a sudden change, because that's also governed and regulated by the DEET. So the funding model is bearing in mind the block grant, accommodation fees, and then, of course, our tuition revenue. So let's just look at the block grant. And what I did is just to do a quick analysis of the block grant over the last 5 years. So I think it's important, colleagues, you understand that, you know, what's happening out there in terms of funding and the availability of funds for the higher education sector. So in this particular slide, you will see in 2020, we allocated a block grant of about 519 million rand. Go forward 4 years or 5 years down the line into 2024, and our block grant allocation, which has been confirmed by DIET for this year, is 470 million rand. So you're looking at a 9% decline, almost 48 million rand in 5 years that the block grant has declined. So already a challenge. On a positive note, and you can, I'd like not to always be the pessimist, so there is, you've got to have some optimism. There is a slight increase in the block grants from 2023 to 2020, or from 2022 to 2023 to 2024. But if you look at the percentage increase in that block grant, I mean, it's only 1.8% from 2022 to 2023, and a mere 1.1% from last year to 2024. So, you know, it gives you an indication that that source of funding is not as huge as it was several years ago. And the thinking in the sector and the feeling in the sector is that this will continue in this trajectory in terms of the grant decreasing or not increasing by a significant level each year. So I thought it important to share that with you because, as I said in my previous slide, the block grant is the highest contributor to MUT's revenue. And if you see that the block grant funding then is declining, it gives you an understanding of how we've got to manage revenue going forward and funding. So some of the DIET funding challenges, why is the block grant decreasing? Is there any changes in how the DIET calculates the block grant? Fundamentally, no. The block grant is calculated on various input and output factors based on teaching and research. So those factors haven't changed, but what has changed is the pool of funds that are available by National Treasury that is effectively allocated to the higher education sector. If I can use an analogy of having a pool that's filled with 80,000 liters of water 5 years ago, that pool now only has 60,000 liters of water, which now has to be distributed. So similarly, this is what's happening in terms of funding. The pool that's available from National Treasury is actually reducing. And I don't want to go into an economic lecture, but I think all of us are well aware of the economic climate in South Africa and the challenges faced. So those are causes for concern. And of course, then the impact is reduced allocations to universities. But also what's important to understand then is, let's look at funding over the last 3 or 4 years. What has happened very briefly in history over the last 4 or 5 years? So in 2020, 2021, we saw COVID. COVID really had a disastrous impact on the economy, and the university sector was also significantly impacted in the sense that there was a huge shift and a huge requirement from the DIET to reprioritize certain grants, where universities were asked to go back to DIET, reprioritize so that they could make funds available for the COVID grant. There were two grants that were provided to the sector to enable the universities to effectively deal with the advent of COVID. But also remembering on a positive note, the sector and many universities, if not all universities, were still managed during that period to pay all their staff and pay their staff full salaries. compared to the private sector, where you saw hundreds of companies closing down, thousands of people losing their jobs. We in public higher education were to an extent protected from that. So I think something to be grateful for and to acknowledge. So 2021, 2020, COVID. 2022, again, DEED comes to us and says, you know, we don't have enough funding for NASFAS. There was a shortfall of 1.5 billion rand, NASFAS funding, 2022. Reprioritizing of grants, re-looking at funding. So impacted on grant allocations again. 2023, again, a request from DEED to reduce block grant. Thankfully, MUT was impacted by a relatively small amount, which we managed, but still a trend you can see developing in the sector from DEET in terms of allocations that they are making and then coming back during the course of the year and effectively reducing grants. And then, in fact, this year, early this year, we were asked again by DEET through National Treasury to relook at the block grant and to consider whether we could change the cash flow of that block grant so that National Treasury could release more of the cash flow in the latter half of the year than the beginning of the year as to what they usually do. Thankfully, they haven't made a firm decision on that, but you know, we never really know what's going to happen in the future with DEET, and they might come to us in the next few months and say, well, this is what we're going to do. So we've got to bear all of that in mind. So it just shows here a trend that's been developing over the last few years in DEET and the grants and the grant allocations, basically. Another challenge we find is that there is no consolidated fee regulation framework, so it makes the setting of fees very difficult. Each university still sets their own fees, but also, what that means is annually, the Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology issues a fee compact, which effectively is couched and termed as a guideline for universities to use in terms of what fee increases they can give to students in respect of tuition fees and accommodation fees. Which they issue to the chairs of council. And as I say, it's a guideline, but very important to note this. Wouldn't the contents of their guidelines, it's just very carefully and specifically that NASA will not change any increase in the amount of money
We are back on the State of the University Address. CFO is on the stage.
Revenue, and similarly, 2021, that academic year was extended into 2022. So that's why that line graph looks very skewed. A significant increase in 2022. But if you look at what's happening from 2022 to 2024, the increments are very, very low. So you'll see, in fact, from 2023 to 2022, we only had a 2% increase in total revenue from accommodation and tuition fees, which is very, very low. And then in 2024, our estimated increment or increase, rather, let me not say increment, the total increase in tuition and accommodation fees that we expect, we only expect a 6% growth, which is quite low as well. So that's just in combination to give you an idea of our tuition and accommodation fee and the growth in those fees. So that's combined. The next slide just illustrates it separately. So on the left hand side, on my left, we're looking at tuition fees, and again you can see the anomaly over those COVID years because of the academic years that only was completed in the next academic year. And then if you look when things started to normalize from 2022 onwards up to 2024, again, a slight increase in tuition revenue. And we're estimating this year tuition revenue to go up by 9%. And that's predominantly because of the enrollment plan, where our enrollment plan targets have increased in terms of actual headcount to about 14,500 students. But interestingly enough, and concerningly as well, is accommodation fees. And if you see what's happened in accommodation fees, again, bearing in mind that COVID years, it's a bit distorted because of the academic years moving into or overflowing into another academic year. The accommodation fees have actually declined, and we're not showing any increase or significant increase from 2022 to 2023 and from 2023 to 2024. And generally, accommodation fees was a high contributor to our total revenue. And we'll talk about why that is happening, basically, predominantly because of the NASFAS capping. So you can see again then from a fee base and from our revenue model of the university that, first of all, the block grant is not where it was a few years ago. And there is a declining trend. And even if increasing block grants, it's increasing by a minimal amount. Secondly, on tuition and accommodation fees, growth trajectory is very, very small, very low. So that's on the revenue side. But let's just quickly about share with you some issues on NASFAS capping and the implications. So last year, during the State of the Nation University address, rather, I shared with you what has happened with NASFAS and the capping, where in 2023, NASFAS introduced capping of accommodation allowances. We had already set our fees for student accommodation, which was higher than the capping. So effectively what that meant is we had approximately 63 million rand worth of accommodation revenue that NASFAS nor the DIET would have funded, which effectively that meant sitting in the students' accounts for students to pay. In terms of our provision for doubtful debts, where we believe there's going to be a risk of not recovery, we then effectively had to raise a provision at the end of 2023 of 47 million rand against that 63 million rand. So again, showing that the capping has had a negative impact on our costs and effectively our cash flow, because that cash flow of 63 million rand, which would have been guaranteed in years prior to 2023, is not anymore guaranteed. So that's had a really negative impact on our revenue and on our cash flow. And then the trend of NASFAS capping has continued into 2024. So what that meant is NASFAS has capped the accommodation allowance again in 2024 to 50,000 rand per annum for metro universities and 41,000 rand per annum for non-metro universities. So in preparing for the 2024 academic year and preparing our budgets for the 2024 academic year, we had to take that into consideration. What that meant is that any increment we applied on accommodation fees, we had to ensure that it was within the NASFAS cap. And effectively then meant that we've lost approximately 38 million rand of revenue that we normally would have had if there was no such capping. So you can see that the capping has had a disastrous impact on MUT's finances as well, which has impacted our total overall budget position. So that's a little bit on the NASFAS capping and implications. Another key challenge is student debt, privately funded student debt. And I touched on this previously as well, but I thought I'd just share with you this graph is a bit dated. It goes to October 2023. But if we had to take it to December 2023 as well, it'll show you the same trend where you see the increment or the increase in student debt which is escalating at an exponential level. And if we are to allow this to continue, we are going to dig a hole deeper than we can get out of in terms of being able to recover from this. And I said before that it might mean that at a point, it might come to a point in time where we may not even be able to register any privately funded students if the debt escalates to a level that's gonna grow exponentially. But this just illustrates that point. I'm not going to go into the figures. I think they're self-explanatory, but you can see that this is really not a good sign for the university. Also, when we look at student debt, we look at collections and how are we doing in terms of collecting student debt. Of course, we focus on privately funded students in this instance because NASFA's, except for the capping from last year, is guaranteed. And if you look at what this is showing you, in terms of fees that are being generated from privately funded students against what is being collected from privately funded students on an annual basis, on average, we are only really collecting 20% of fees from privately funded students annually that register in the current year, which means 80% of those fees get carried forward into the following year for us to try and collect. And of course, as those debt gets older, the greater the risk is and the more we have to provide for them. So again, just to illustrate the fact that we really are in crisis mode when it comes to privately funded student debt. And to further illustrate that, at the end of every year, we've got to make a provision for how much of debt we consider not to be recoverable. And at the end of 2023, you will see that we've provided for approximately two-thirds of the privately funded debt, which is a phenomenally high figure for the purposes of collecting debt. So we've 440 million of the 660 million is considered to be not recoverable. So not where we want to be. Okay, then that brings me to talk a little bit more in detail about the budget for 2024. And at the outset, I must say that we tried on several occasions to not get into a situation where we have gone into a deficit budget. The 2024 budget for the first time in several years is a deficit budget, which of course does not bode well for the university. But those of you who were involved in the budget setting process and your HODs and other members of your teams would have seen that the budget went back several times for budget cuts in order to try and reduce the deficit. But because of the funding challenges that I've explained in my earlier slides, the result is we've had to table a deficit budget to the administrator for approval. The budget also, very importantly, is structured into two distinct sections or categories. One we call council controlled, where we're accounting for all the council controlled income and expenses, and the other is residences. And if you recall earlier in my presentation, I said the way we're looking at residences and resident income and costs from a sector perspective and from a university perspective has changed because we are now required to look at residences separately from the normal operations of the university because it's a non-core operation of the university, and we effectively need to manage that budget separately from our university budget. And of even greater concern, then, if you look at council control budget, that budget is effectively a negative budget of 31 million rand. The residence budget is a small surplus of 4 million rand, giving us a net surplus of 27 million rand. And this is it's an adjusted budget. It's adjusted because when we preliminarily got the budget approved last year, The issues regarding the NASFA's, the DIET block grant was not finalized and the fee compact was not finalized. that we got early this year, which required that we adjust the budget further to take those reductions into account. So therefore, with the reduction in those revenue items, we've gone into a further budget of budget deficit of 27 million or 2%. We've of course been asked by the administrator, as Prof has said in his introduction, to look at costs, particularly for the 2024 year, and embark on a cost-cutting exercise to try and bring the budget back in line to a balanced state. So that process has started already in terms of it. But to have a negative or to have a surplus, rather deficit budget is really not a good thing at all. And also, just for information purposes, any deficit above 3% on a budget will require the minister's approval. So we kind of safe in that sense for now, and we certainly don't want to get to a level of beyond 3%. So reasons for it, as we've said, increasing expenditure greater than income. Of course, we can't have that situation where your expenditure grows faster than or escalates faster than income. And even in your personal budgets, if you know that that's happening, then you know it's caused problems. Employee cost is the biggest cost. Our budget for 2024 is 590 million rand for employee costs, which makes up 72% of the council-controlled income, which is way above the DIET norm of between 58% and 62%. So again, there are huge cause for concern from an employee cost point of view. And the employee cost base that we have at MUT is significantly higher compared to the institutions, if you compare the nature and size of the institutions. Other huge costs that we have to contend with is utilities, student transport. I mean, we have fixed costs such as security, your cleaning, hygiene, waste, pest control, grounds and landscaping. Our IT costs are significant, almost 31 million rand a year that we spend on IT and maintenance, 20 million, although I know I see Mr. Kao sitting here and he tells me all the time, even the 20 million is not sufficient to cover all the maintenance, but we've given maintenance a quite a big amount this year compared to previous years to focus on ensuring that all the maintenance projects underway can continue. And again, we don't want to compromise the core operations of the university and make sure that from an infrastructure point of view, you know, there are funds available so that operations can continue. So that's just a touch on the key expenditure items. The next pie chart you'll see is just an illustrative version of this to show you who's got the biggest part, piece of the pie, and the biggest piece of the pie, of course, goes to employee costs, followed by student accommodation. So I'm not going to talk too much about this because I've explained previously. So that touches on, colleagues, the budget, revenue, operating expenses, and how everything comes together holistically, and how we see things at a consolidated level. In conclusion, there's a couple of slides I just want to touch on quickly. And we talk about prudent financial management, and I suppose in your own households as well, there's some level of prudence you must follow when you look at how you manage your household budgets, because you cannot be spending more than you earn unless you've got a big overdraft facility and your banks are funding your household expenditure, which many households do have. Actually, South Africa is a country that's in debt, and how many households are in debt, but we don't want to get to that situation. So prudent financial management requires strict financial discipline, and it's not just strict financial discipline from my office that turns away requests for expenditure and so forth. It requires strict financial discipline from all stakeholders in the university, staff, students, external stakeholders, and so forth. It's very, very important. Internal to us, who generally spend money at the university, I said, I mean, what are the questions one should ask when we want to incur expenditure? Let us think about this. What are we spending on? How much does it cost? Is it an absolute necessity? What are the alternatives? And can we do without it? Those are some of the questions that one has to ask these days before you can just simply spend money. Of course, the other question I got here is, has it been budgeted for? I haven't put that in here. But the fact of the matter is, if it's budgeted for, doesn't necessarily mean you can spend it. Because the budget is a piece of paper that talks about revenue and talks about expenditure and comes to an amount. But it's largely dictated by whether we actually generate that revenue and collect that money so that we can spend that money. So as much as you may say, I have it in my budget, why can't I spend it? You still need to ask yourself these questions, because it is very often that we may not have the cash to spend it, basically, although you got it in your budget. So bear that in mind, that although we have a budget, it's dictated to a large extent by cash flow. Cost-cutting is imperative in order to ensure MUT, restore MUT to a balanced financial performance and to generate surpluses. And surpluses, we talk about revenue exceeding your costs. But it's also critical to understand that, again, as much as you want to have that on paper, revenue greater than costs, you want to have that actual surplus cash in your bank. It's no use just putting it on paper and then not having the surplus cash in your bank account, because then you've actually achieved nothing. At the end of the day, and I always say cash is king, so you've got to have cash. So we need to strive to generate cash surpluses, basically, not just book surpluses. Cash surplus is very important. So that's a little bit about prudent financial management. In terms of planning for the future, again, it's not just about the now. It's not just about where we are now for 2024. When we talk about financial planning, we talk about the next 3 to 5 years and beyond. And that's critical, because you cannot make decisions now only for now. Whatever decisions you make now, you got to think about what the implications are going to be for the next 3 to 5 years and the long term, because we want the university to continue, as I've said in my slide, for generations to come. Even when we're long gone, the university must still continue. So we've got to act in the best interest of the university in whatever we do in terms of planning for the future. Then also coupled with that is growth and development. We can't forget about the fact that we want to grow and develop the university, and we cannot simply just rely on DEED funding to do that, because we know that the DEED funding is not going to do that to the extent that it was doing it several years ago. So again, another factor to take into consideration when we plan for the future. And then another question we need to ask is, what should the future look like, or what do you want the future to look like during your time here at MUT and for future generations to come? And I've just put in 3 points I thought of. I mean, this is not cast in stone. These are just my thoughts. And I said, you know, I'd like to see a stable and secure future for everyone of us, students, and all other stakeholders in the university. So we need stability and we need security. Very, very important. We need a cohesive environment that promotes teamwork and togetherness. Because without that, everybody's going to go against each other, and you're not going to get that teamwork, and you're going to always have people working in different directions, and we cannot have that. So you need togetherness, you need a cohesive environment. And lastly, we need to be progressive and we need to be agile. We need to be able to progress and move forward with technology, with advancements, with innovation, and we must be agile as an institution. We must be able to change. We must be able to keep up with the times. We cannot practice or continue to practice what we practiced in the past, because that's not going to work for us. If that's the case, we will be left behind and the university will collapse if we're not agile and we're not progressive. Lastly, colleagues, this is just very quickly a synopsis. Financial sustainability, when we talk about financial sustainability, the three key pillars for me is revenue growth. We need to grow revenue in all its forms and all revenue streams. We need to reduce costs strategically, operationally. We need to reduce costs, and we need to generate surplus cash. If we get those three pillars right, on a firm footing, we will achieve financial sustainability. That's the last of my slides, colleague. I thank you for your attentiveness. Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you so much, CFO, for your insightful presentation. Before I invite the Senior Director, HR&D, I want to request the assistance from Jade there at the back, that for the Q&A, we follow the strategy we used last year. We only have 30 minutes, colleagues will take questions from the floor, as well as the Jade is going to provide pieces of papers. If ever you want to jot down any question, please, you are free to do so, but we'll also give you the opportunity to ask questions verbally. So, Jade, if ever you could provide us with little pieces of papers. So, colleagues, if ever you need a paper, just go at the back and get the piece of paper from Jade. So, without any further waste of time, I will now invite Mr. Babu Bridgelal to come and address us on the organizational review. Thank you. Over to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're still on the State of the University address delivered by all the executive management of Mangosuthu University of Technology. They are taking us through what happened last year and what plans do they have in place as the year progresses, the academic year of 2024. Njengamanje, there is a senior director of human resource development.
So I don't think so. MUT is unique. And we are the only ones that are reviewing our organizational structure. I think the spiraling debts and the reduction in funding in all higher education institutions is affecting them. And I know for a fact that even UKZN is busy with something called Project Renewal. They're looking at the structure, and of course, they also guaranteed no retrenchments, but you never know. So they're also busy with their own renewal program. So I think just about every higher education institution is busy with some kind of a revision of the organizational structures and organizational designs in one way or the other. Now, we know that, and I don't think so that MUT has ever revised its organizational structure in the last maybe 10, 12 odd years. But you know that the organizational structure drives the university strategy. So every time when there's a revision of your strategy, you need to look at the organizational structure and see whether it's relevant and see whether it is going to be able to deliver on the strategic objectives and goals of the university. So that's where we are with our, and I'm going to give you that update now. The organizational structure took a lot of time, and it was driven by Dr. Van Koller before I came in. So it took a lot of time to get it to where it was in 2022, where it went back and forth many, many, many times. And eventually around about May 2022, council approved the structure. And of course, you know that things changed at the university, and council then got dissolved in September 2022, and the administrator was then appointed. So once the administrator and his team came on board, we took a implementation plan to the administrator and his team, and for implementation, and of course, the administrator advised us that the implementation of the organizational structure must be placed on hold, and advised that human resources relook at the organizational design principles and the entire organizational structure. So the main reasons for halting the implementation of the new structure were as follows. Of course, the cost of the new structure And like the CFO has already spoken, you know, the DHA norms are between 58 and 63%. And anything above that is in itself a reason to place a university under administration. We're already there. So the current structure in its current format, when fully implemented, and the administrator and his team did the calculations, would have escalated the cost to about 87-88%, and that is way out of the DHET norms. So that was one of the key reasons why we had placed the implementation on hold. Although we were going to do it on a phase-based approach, but we had to place it on hold so that we can deal with those issues. Of course, MUT's staff component, far too big. A key criticism is that look at the size of your university and look at your structure. It does not talk to each other. We are the smallest university, and we've got a huge, huge organizational structure. So we had to go back to the drawing boards, and that's one of the things we will be looking at. And of course, looking at the design principles that will also be organizational structure. For example, you know, some departments have a director position, and you got no one reporting into those positions. How do you then call it a director? Those were some of the other issues raised by the team. And of course, and the main reason is the cuts in DHET grants and subsidy. Something else that the administrators team wanted us to look at is that our organizational structure must be designed with our five-year projected enrollment plan. I think that should underpin our organizational structure. They say, look at your five-year organizational, your five-year enrollment plan. That's not going to change too much, and you design your organizational structure around that, particularly in the academic sector. So, of course, we took all these comments and we went back to EMC. We discussed it at length at EMC, and EMC then resolved that we need to get some outside perspective and engage the services of an OD specialist, and not just any OD specialist, but somebody who's got organizational design experience to assist us to look at the current structure. So EMC also resolved that we are not going to start from scratch, but rather to take what is already developed and work from there. The OD specialist who's going to look at that structure and make recommendations in terms of shape, size, personnel costs, DHET norms, etc. So that's what he's going to do, and of course he's going to make some recommendations. And we will then take those recommendations into a full Lekotla with all senior management members, possibly in the second quarter of this year. And then we can finalize that part of the discussions and develop a revised organizational structure. So the brief that we've given to the OD specialist is to assess the current organizational structure in line with the 2020-2025 university strategy. And I think it's okay. It's good to do it now, because we are going to our strategic developments for the next 5 years, and perhaps that will give us a good idea of where we are in terms of the size of our structure and how we need to tweak it. The brief to the OD consultant was to also identify options and make recommendations designed to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the organizational structure, to benchmark against comparable universities, UOTs, of same shape and income, and to identify best practices. Review and identify whether staffing levels are appropriate to meet workloads in each department, both academic support and academic support. We also intend doing some skills audit and make recommendations. And of course, I don't think so. We'll be the OD consultant is going to be able to do this. This will be a separate project that we will have to look at. His brief is also to design a leadership and management style framework to support the newly designed structure. So, of course, the administrator's team also had a question about the top management structure and whether that is fit for purpose as well. So we're going to have to look at that when we go through this revision process and to propose a new revised structure that is in line with DHET personnel costs. The review of job profiles and the design of new job profiles, where it's applicable, again, that will be a separate project that we will look at. And of course, we will look at the workload model, etc., when we do that. So the consultant has been appointed. The consultant has started work on the 1st of March. And he will be speaking to deans and to get a sense of what is happening in the academic sector and how he's going to be able to design something that's fit for purpose for MUT. So the purpose of the organizational design and the organizational design principles is basically the alignment with goals and strategy. Like I said, strategy always drives your structure. So it's the alignment of goals and strategy is to improve efficiency and effectiveness in the system, adaptability and flexibility, communication and collaboration, talent management, very important, talent management and employee engagement, risk management, and of course, lastly, customer and client focus. So those are, that's what we want to achieve in the long term with our structure. So what are the implications of the organizational design? Downsizing of MUT staff component, staff composition. Indications of where there is excess staff or inefficiencies. So we want to make sure that we deal with the inefficiencies in the system and also look at excess staff. Reconfiguration of jobs to achieve new objectives, redeployment of staff to other departments, and of course, retraining, reskilling staff. And you know, you're quite aware that NASFAS and its own operations has already affected the financial aid office, and we're in the process of looking at those employees who are affected in the financial aid office and trying to look how best we can accommodate them. Of course, the VC has already, on behalf of EMC, given you the commitment that there will be no retrenchments. We will make every effort to ensure that there is no retrenchment. And that means that we will be trying our level best to accommodate people who are affected in other departments through new assignments, through new tasks, through new job opportunities, and we call on employees who are affected to take up these new opportunities that may come up as we go along. So, colleagues, that's where we are with the organizational structure. Alongside this process, alongside this project that has already commenced, there's another project from the office of the VC. That is the climate and culture project that has also commenced, and we've had some meetings, and we've appointed a service climate and culture survey for us, and of course, making recommendations on how we can improve as MUT. So that project is also running side by side. So colleagues, there's lots of projects running side by side, all in an effort to improve MUT so that it's relevant, so that we have a structure that's fit for purpose to deliver on our strategic goals as we get into the next strategic planning session. Colleagues, I will end there. Thank you very much. I hope now you have a much clearer picture of where we are as MUT in terms of our finances and what's the update with regards to the organizational structure and why it has not been implemented. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Thank you so much, Mr. B, for sharing some light as far as organizational review is concerned. Colleagues, it's that time where we have to take questions. As I indicated, we only have 30 minutes for the Q&A session, so it's 12:30. We need to finish to finish by 1300 hours. So, Jade, please give me an indication if ever there is anything on your side, any papers? No. So, which means colleagues will take questions from the floor. May I kindly request that we keep our questions very short, straight to the point, nothing more than 30 seconds. Straight to the point so that we will maximize the limited time that we have. And there is a roving mic, Ian, that there at the back will assist me. You will come to you if ever I see a hand. I recognize.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.